Chapter 21. Neighborhood, and that several of these, having decided to stay on account of the same tempestuous weather, had already engaged the spare beds. If Mr. Dare would give up his room, and share a double-bedded room with Mr. Havill, the thing could be done, but not otherwise. To this the two companions agreed, and presently went upstairs with as gentlemanly a walk, and vertical a candle as they could exhibit under the circumstances. The other inmates of the inn soon retired to rest, and the storm raged on unheeded by all local humanity. 3. At 2 o'clock the rain lessened its fury. At 2:30 the obscured moon shone forth, and at 3 Havill awoke. The blind had not been pulled down overnight, and the moonlight streamed into the room, across the bed whereon Dare was sleeping. He lay on his back, his arms thrown out, and his well-curved youthful form looked like an unpedestaled Dionysus in the colorless lunar rays. Sleep had cleared Havill's mind from the drowsing effects of the last night's sitting, and he thought of Dare's mysterious manner in speaking of himself. This lad resembled the Etruscan youth Tages, in one respect, that of being a boy with, seemingly, the wisdom of a sage, and the effect of his presence was now heightened by all those sinister and mystic attributes which are lent by nocturnal environment. He who in broad daylight might be but a young chevalier d'industry was now an unlimited possibility in social phenomena. Havill remembered how the lad had pointed to his breast, and said that his secret was literally kept there. The architect was too much of a provincial to have quenched the common curiosity that was part of his nature by the acquired metropolitan indifference to other people's lives which, in essence more unworthy even than the former, causes less practical inconvenience in its exercise. Dare was breathing profoundly. Instigated as above mentioned, Havill got out of bed and stood beside the sleeper. After a moment's pause he gently pulled back the unfastened collar of Dare's nightshirt, and saw a word tattooed in distinct characters on his breast. Before there was time for Havill to decipher it, Dare moved slightly, as if conscious of disturbance, and Havill hastened back to bed. Dare bestirred himself yet more, whereupon Havill breathed heavily, though keeping an intent glance on the lad through his half-closed eyes to learn if he had been aware of the investigation. Dare was certainly conscious of something, for he sat up, rubbed his eyes, and gazed around the room. Then after a few moments of reflection he drew some article from beneath his pillow. A blue gleam shone from the object as Dare held it in the moonlight, and Havill perceived that it was a small revolver. A clammy dew broke out upon the face and body of the architect when, stepping out of bed with the weapon in his hand, Dare looked under the bed, behind the curtains, out of the window, and into a closet, as if convinced that something had occurred, but in doubt as to what it was. He then came across to where Havill was lying, and still keeping up the appearance of sleep. Watching him a while, and mistrusting the reality of this semblance, Dare brought it to the test by holding the revolver within a few inches of Havill's forehead. Havill could stand no more. Crystallized with terror, he said, without however moving more than his lips, in dread of hasty action on the part of Dare, "Oh, good Lord! Dare, Dare, I have done nothing!" The youth smiled, and lowered the pistol. "I was only finding out whether it was you or some burglar who had been playing tricks upon me. I find it was you." Do put away that thing. It is too ghastly to produce in a respectable bedroom. Why do you carry it? Cosmopolites always do. Now answer my questions. What were you up to? And Dare, as he spoke, played with the pistol again. Havill had recovered some coolness. "You could not use it upon me," he said sardonically, watching Dare. "It would be risking your neck for too little an object." "I did not think you were shrewd enough to see that," replied Dare carelessly, as he returned the revolver to its place. Well, whether you have outwitted me or no, you will keep the secret, as long as I choose. Apostrophe apostrophe why? Apostrophe apostrophe said Avil. Because I keep your secret of the letter abusing Miss P, and of the pilfered tracing you carry in your pocket. Apostrophe apostrophe, it is quite true, apostrophe said Avil. They went to bed again. Dare was soon asleep, but Avil did not attempt to disturb him again. The elder man slept but fitfully. He was aroused in the morning by a heavy rumbling and jingling along the highway overlooked by the window, the front wall of the house, being shaken by the reverberation. There is no rest for me here, apostrophe he said, rising and going to the window, carefully avoiding the neighborhood of Mr. Dare. When Avil had glanced out he returned to dress himself. What's that noise? Apostrophe apostrophe said Dare, awakened by the same rumble. It is the artillery going away. Apostrophe apostrophe, from where? Apostrophe apostrophe, Markton Barracks. Apostrophe apostrophe, hurrah! Apostrophe apostrophe said Dare, jumping up in bed. I have been waiting for that these 6 weeks. Apostrophe apostrophe, Avil did not ask questions as to the meaning of this unexpected remark. When they were downstairs, Dare's first act was to ring the bell and ask if his Army and Navy Gazette had arrived. While the servant was gone, Avil cleared his throat and said, I am an architect, and I take in the architect. You are an architect, and you take in the Army and Navy Gazette. Apostrophe apostrophe, I am not an architect any more than I am a soldier, but I have taken in the Army and Navy Gazette these many weeks. Apostrophe apostrophe, when they were at breakfast the paper came in. Dare hastily tore it open and glanced at the pages. I am going to Markton after breakfast. Apostrophe apostrophe, he said suddenly, before looking up, we will walk together if you like. Apostrophe apostrophe, they walked together as planned, and entered Markton about 10 o'clock. I have just to make a call here, apostrophe said Dare, when they were opposite the barrack entrance on the outskirts of the town, where wheel tracks and a regular chain of hoof marks left by the departed batteries were imprinted in the gravel between the open gates. I shall not be a moment. Apostrophe Avil stood still, while his companion entered, and asked the commissary in charge, or somebody representing him, when the new batteries would arrive to take the place of those which had gone away. He was informed that it would be about noon. Now I am at your service, apostrophe said Dare, and will help you to rearrange your design by the new intellectual light we have acquired. Apostrophe apostrophe, they entered Avil's office and set to work. When contrasted with the tracing from Somerset's plan, Avil's design, which was not far advanced, revealed all its weaknesses to him. After seeing Somerset's scheme, the bands of Avil's imagination were loosened. He laid his own previous efforts aside, got fresh sheets of drawing paper, and drew with vigor. I may as well stay and help you, apostrophe said Dare. I have nothing to do till 12 o'clock, and not much then. Apostrophe apostrophe, so there he remained. At a quarter to 12 children and idlers began to gather against the railings of Avil's house. A few minutes past 12 the noise of an arriving host was heard at the entrance to the town. Thereupon Dare and Avil went to the window. The 10. And Y batteries of the Z Brigade, Royal Horse Artillery, were entering Markton, each headed by the major with his bugler behind him. In a moment they came abreast and passed, every man in his place, that is to say. Six shining horses, in pairs, harnessed by rope traces white as milk, with a driver on each near horse. Two gunners on the lead-colored stout-wheeled limber, their carcasses jolted to a jelly for lack of springs. Two gunners on the lead-colored stout-wheeled gun carriage, in the same personal condition. The 9-pounder gun, dipping its heavy head to earth, as if ashamed of its office in these enlightened times. The complement of jingling and prancing troopers, riding at the wheels and elsewhere. Six shining horses with their drivers, and traces white as milk, as before. Two more gallant jolted men, on another jolting limber, and more stout wheels and lead-colored paint. Two more jolted men on another drooping gun. More jingling troopers on horseback. Again six shining draft horses, traces, drivers, gun, gunners, lead paint, stout wheels and troopers as before. So each detachment lumbered slowly by, all eyes martially forward, except when wandering in quest of female beauty. He's a fine fellow, is he not? Apostrophe apostrophe said there, denoting by a nod a mounted officer, with a sallow, yet handsome face, and black mustache, who came up on a bay gelding with the men of his battery. What is he? Apostrophe apostrophe said Havill. A captain who lacks advancement. Apostrophe apostrophe, do you know him? Apostrophe apostrophe, I know him. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, do you? Apostrophe apostrophe, there made no reply, and they watched the captain as he rode past with his drawn sword in his hand, the sun making a little sun upon its blade, and upon his brilliantly polished long boots and bright spurs, also warming his gold cross belt and braidings, white gloves, busby with its red bag, and tall white plume. Havill seemed to be too indifferent to press his questioning, and when all the soldiers had passed by, Dare observed to his companion that he should leave him for a short time, but would return in the afternoon or next day. After this he walked up the street in the rear of the artillery, following them to the barracks. On reaching the gates he found a crowd of people gathered outside, looking with admiration at the guns and gunners drawn up within the enclosure. When the soldiers were dismissed to their quarters the sightseers dispersed, and Dare went through the gates to the barrack yard. The guns were standing on the green, the soldiers and horses were scattered about, and the handsome captain whom Dare had pointed out to Havill was inspecting the buildings in the company of the quartermaster. Dare made a mental note of these things, and, apparently changing a previous intention, went out from the barracks and returned to the town. IV. To return for a while to George Somerset. The sun of his later existence having vanished from that young man's horizon, he confined himself closely to the studio, superintending the exertions of his draftsmen Bowles, Knowles, and Cockton, who were now in the full swing of working out Somerset's creations from the sketches he had previously prepared. He had so far got the start of Havill in the competition that, by the help of these three gentlemen, his design was soon finished. But he gained, no unfair advantage on this account, an additional month being allowed to Havill, to compensate for his later information. Before scaling up his drawings, Somerset wished to spend a short time in London, and dismissing his assistants till further notice, he locked up the rooms which had been appropriated as office and studio and prepared for the journey. It was afternoon. Somerset walked from the castle in the direction of the wood, to reach Markton by a detour. He had not proceeded far, when there approached his path a man riding a bay horse with a square-cut tail. The equestrian wore a grizzled beard, and looked at Somerset with a piercing eye as he noiselessly ambled nearer over the soft sod of the park. He proved to be Mr. Cunningham Hayes, chief constable of the district, who had become slightly known to Somerset during his sojourn here. One word, Mr. Somerset, apostrophe said the chief, after they had exchanged nods of recognition, reining his horse as he spoke. Somerset stopped. You have a studio at the castle in which you are preparing drawings? Apostrophe apostrophe, I have. Apostrophe apostrophe, have you a clerk? Apostrophe apostrophe, I had three till yesterday, when I paid them off. Apostrophe apostrophe, would they have any right to enter the studio late at night? Apostrophe apostrophe, there would have been nothing wrong in their doing so. Either of them might have gone back at any time for something forgotten. They lived quite near the castle. Apostrophe, ah, then all is explained. I was riding past over the grass on the night of last Thursday, and I saw two persons in your studio with a light. It must have been about 9:30. One of them came forward and pulled down the blind so that the light fell upon his face. But I only saw it for a short time. ". If it were Knowles or Cockton, he would have had a beard. ". Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.